This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za. You're listening to Lerato Mbele on Power 98.7. Weekdays 9 a.m. to midday. Now we're talking.
Okay, let's talk all things equestrian. We're talking about horses today. I'm feeling like we're very into nature today, but maybe that's a beautiful thing. Horses are truly elegant and majestic beings. They truly are. They're quite dangerous. But they're just a wonder, a marvel to watch. And if you ever get a chance to be in rural Lesotho, like, you know, the towns outside of Maseru, and you just see these horsemen and women just riding these horses through the mountains because the roads just can't be navigated. It's just such a sight, a wonderful sight. But there are many countries or nations that love their horses. The British absolutely obsess over their horses. And equestrian sports is a huge, huge cultural affair in the UK. It's also big business. But breeding and rearing horses, okay, the people in the Arab world are also too, the Arabians, right? UAE, Bahrain, also big horsemen and women. But let me tell you, it's a truly expensive sport if you ride horses, play polo. It's a truly expensive endeavor if you breed horses. And I've been told that the veterinary costs for one horse could run anywhere between 300,000 and 2 million. It is not child's play. So owning a horse is not a game, but it can be a truly rewarding business if you do it correctly. And so Fundis Tebe is here. She's the CEO of 4 Racing. Thank you so much for coming through. And today's talking about what? Masterclass? It's not yet an entrepreneurial edge, but it feels like an entrepreneurial story. Good morning.
Good morning. Is it still morning? It is. Good morning, Lerato. Thank you so much for having me on Power FM. It's always such a pleasure to be here. And I think Power FM has been quite leading in terms of engaging around horse racing and the sport of horse racing. So very happy.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad that we can do that. So first and foremost, let's just deal with the basics. There are those people who bet horses every day. I know quite a few. We've got uncles like that.
Yep.
And that's horse racing.
Correct.
And then there are people who go to the Durban July.
Correct.
Or the Kentucky Derby or Royal Ascot.
Yes.
That's also horse racing.
Yes, yes.
These two things are not the same thing.
Yes or no? So typically in South Africa, maybe let me put it in the South African context, we probably race around 280 to 300 days in the year. There's different jurisdictions. So you mentioned the July, which is Gold Circle. We are in Fairview and Gqeberha in Johannesburg, Turfentine, as well as the Vaal. And you've then got Cape Town, Kenilworth, and Cape Racing. So between us and South Africa, we literally stayed 300 race days. And it's largely for two reasons. It's one for physically the horses to compete, but also importantly for us to broadcast so that punters, people that want to put bets on these horses, can do so regularly. In between that, you also have other jurisdictions. So we may be racing today, for example, you'll see Australia racing, you'll see the UK racing, Hong Kong is very big in racing, Japan was very big, South Korea. I mean, places that we never even thought possible. So I think horse racing goes back many, many, many years, and it's got such a rich history about it. People enjoy it for whether they are punters or whether they're owners. But like you say, just to see this magnificent animal running to its fullest is amazing.
So a year has 365 days, 300 of those days. So in other words, 11 months of the year, give or take, is how many times horses are racing in a year. So it's an almost a year-long sport.
That's it.
Unlike football and others seasonally.
Exactly. That's exactly it. So what we do is we have our season, and even when we're off-season, you know, so because you've got to treat the grass and treat your track, we're still racing for fewer times, but then the circus has moved literally to Cape Town,
okay,
or to Durban, because their season is now about to start in, okay, Durban. And why I say that is because people, I think, think that horse racing is confined to a Durban July, a Summer Cup, right, or the Met, whereas actually those are the big events to attend,
yeah,
for racegoers, but there's literally racing every single day that the punter is watching.
So Turfantine right now, horses are racing?
Turfantine right now. Today is a Tuesday, so we'll be racing. We race in Turfantine on Saturday. Probably the next race is probably on Thursday. And wow, today we're either at the Vaal or in Durban.
Okay, but basically what I'm saying is there are horses racing right somewhere.
Correct.
Okay, and so you mentioned the July, the Met. Those are Golden Circle tickets. So so that's a whole affair.
Correct. So, okay, and you find this internationally now, Lerato, that it's not like that in the days gone by that people would still go watch racing just on a random day.
Mm.
Now we tie and hype up certain events, you know, where you've got Group 1 racing, Group 2 racing, which is higher quality, higher stakes to be won, and you make events of that. So the Durban July is one such event. Okay. The Met here in Joburg is the Summer Cup. And we really make it an event so that people can go out, have a party, have, okay, good racing. It's just like horse racing meets party in,
okay,
one.
So it's making it chic. Okay, but this is what people have said, is many people who attend these high-level events don't know the first thing about horses. and they're not even there for the horses.
Yeah.
And that a handful of people, a small percentage of people, are actually there for the horses. So the people who are actually there for the horses at these Golden Circle events, what are they looking out for?
So two things, right? I always say when you go to the track, it's the most fascinating thing, Lerato. It's almost like you can cut the track in half. On the one side is usually the marquees and the sound and the music, mm, and they hardly ever even hear that the horse is racing, right? And on the other side is literally those owners, the trainers that are truly invested in the sport and are truly invested in the outcome, right? So the owners are obviously looking, it's about the ego, right? Okay. It's definitely about the ego, because I've got the horse that has got the right breed with the right jockey at the right merit rating, and it's winning at this distance. It's a huge thing, right? And eventually I also took it for granted initially. And I then got into a syndicate with 10 ladies. So there's 10 of us. And we own a female horse, Mrs. Geriatrics.
Aww.
And she ran a few times and has really kicked some serious butt because she's good.
Well, Mrs. Geriatrics.
Mrs. Geriatrics with a name
she's
like
not
that,
old.
Right? She's a 3-year-old, believe it or not. So the funny thing, and maybe part of how the horses are named is also by the lineage. So Mrs. Geriatrics, her father is a Vercingetorix.
Okay.
Vercingetorix, right? So then we play around with the names, uh-huh, and then Mrs. Geriatrics became that.
Ah.
So you'll have, you know, sires from like the Duke of Marmalade, and then they'll have something, something Lady of Marmalade. So the names are derived a lot of the times from, okay, parents.
All right. So we've often associated horse ownership with wealth. Is that a proper correlation?
If your horse is winning and it's making you money, then yeah, of course, you're laughing all the way to the bank. But I think the one thing is we have to break the stigma that horse racing is an investment. It's an investment in that you have something that you put, it's a hobby. It's a really great hobby, which may work, which may not work.
Okay.
I mean, before we got into Mrs. Geriatrics, I had 3 other horses, Shane, that did nothing for my bank balance, instead eroded it. Because like you say, it's your vet bowl. Mm. The horses have got to be trained every single day. They've got to eat every single day. They've got to be stable.
You'll tell us about that. So I just want to first clear the myth, if it's a myth, that if you own a horse, even in a syndicate, you've got to be moneyed.
No, absolutely. You don't have to be moneyed. Because I say you can buy 5% a leg, a hoof, an ear.
What?
You can get into a syndicate that works best for you. And that works according to your amount that you're able to afford. So you don't have to have millions. You don't have to even have hundreds of thousands.
So you can say, I'm a horse racer, horse breeder. I own the leg of Mrs. Geriatrics.
That's it. I own 5% of Mrs. Geriatrics. But 5% of Mrs. Geriatrics winning is the same thrill as 100%. Because that's what I could afford.
I did not know this. Now we know something here. Okay. And so to that end, are we seeing more new entrants into the field of horse racing? I think the only other black owner I've ever heard of is the late Richard Maponya.
Yeah.
And he only started investing in horse racing after he built a network of retail stores and shops,
yeah,
but before the big malls. Yeah. So he was already a successful, prominent businessman.
Yeah. So Ntate Richard Maponya was a very prominent, I think opened up the way for a lot of us. Jessica Mtaung owns a couple of horses. We own some horses together. There is a gentleman by the name of Stinky Powe. He probably owns about 20.
What?
And his one last week, Purple Pitcher.
Heaven.
With a jockey, Kabelo Matsunyane, from Soweto. So the story is just, it's lovely, right? Black owner, black jockey. Female trainer being Robin. So it's just an amazing story. And he loves it. You also have a gentleman called Tate Kwasinkale, who had MK's Pride. And his colors, because you also choose the colors of, you know, your silks, were Kaiser Chiefs, because he's an avid Chiefs fan. And he had two, you know, so you've got a little bit more people coming in, but we have a lot more to do. And it's conversations like this that start to debunk the story of ownership.
Okay. And what this is also saying to me, and I digress a little bit, is, you know, there's been a big push, and rightly so, for black people, the middle class, to start investing in art and exposing people to the wonders of collecting art. And what you're saying is there's also something else you could do.
Easily. And Lerato, now the latest in the last 2 weeks is that South African horses can now be exported once again. So if you really get a good horse, like when, you know, we had an opportunity, your horse could be bought in dollars, in pounds, because our breeding is far still considered to be world class, but still cheaper than the Australian market, for example. So
okay, so let's talk about breeding a horse. What goes into it? Because you've spoken about lineage and pedigree. Mrs. Geriatrics is the daughter of, and he was the son of. So what is that whole bloodline that you're looking at?
So the bloodline, first of all, for a thoroughbred to remain a thoroughbred, there has to be, and I have to be almost graphic, there has to be physical coverage. So it's not like you can inject the sperm into a mare and the thoroughbred, a stallion, has to meet with a mare, and that's how it happens. So what then happens is you've got really, really good stud farms like Drakenstein, you've got Wilgeboorstrift, you've got Maritzfontein, and they've already got stallions that potentially have retired that used to be really, really good in their days. And you pay probably $150,000, can go up to that much, or 250,000 for your mare, which is the female horse, to be covered by a stallion. So I once went to Drakenstein, and there was a beautiful stallion still there, Trippy. And Trippy's got lots and lots and lots of offspring, but Trippy was award-winning. And so he then becomes a very good stallion, and you can charge prime. And I watched Trippy do a live covering of good old 2 minutes, and Trippy was feeling himself for 2 minutes. But that itself was 250,000 because of what Trippy had done. And so they also choose the mares carefully in terms of who can Trippy cover, who can't, so that you almost maintain a very, very good, strong bloodline.
Okay, so you've got Trippy, who's a stallion with very good genes. You then want to acquire Trippy's wild oats, shall we call it that?
Yep.
For 250,000. So that's your investment. It's not Trippy himself. It's what Trippy brings to the table. The mare who's about to be impregnated by Trippy, do you own that horse?
Correct. So I will go to a farm and say, I like Trippy. Please, can Trippy sort out my mare? And then just that encounter of 2 minutes is 250,000. So Trippy's got to be taken care of at the stud farm. You've got to make sure that he's maintained, that Trippy stays in tip-top power for him to perform. And even my mare, Trippy is not going to just necessarily mix with any mare, right? I need to say my mare, maybe it is Mrs. Geriatrics, has done this, has done that. And we think that bringing Trippy's genes, Mrs. Geriatrics' genes will come together quite nicely. And then, boom.
This sounds like those matchmaking shows you watch on Netflix. Because the Indian version is very strict. Pedigree. What do you bring to the table?
Yeah.
What does he bring to the table? She brings her Harvard MBA. He brings his Stanford MBA. Their dowry, your dowry, makes for a good gene pool.
That's it.
And it's that sort of thing that's going on.
That's it. Because a good gene pool, not necessarily is guaranteeing, but will almost help you towards achieving certain performance and certain achievements.
Okay.
And so people, because you want to win, you want to set up your horse for the best win possible. possible.
Okay. So if I've understood it well, Fundi, you've got a mayor, even if it's Mrs. Geriatrics and you're 5%. So you ladies own this mare. You then want her to breed with a high-value stallion. You find the 250 so that that breeding can take place. Hopefully, your mare is pregnant. Then the foal is the outcome of that investment.
Correct.
That becomes a horse, literally, that you've bred and can raise from the ground
Correct.
Up.
Correct. So then that mare then is obviously then brought up a little bit. And then when the mare turns a year, by the way, useless information. All horses in the southern hemisphere turn 1 year old. Turn a year older on the 1st of September. Even if your mare gave birth in April, or even if the mare gave birth in, you know, November, the following September, that foal becomes a year
older,
right?
So even if the foal was born 1st of August, on the 1st of September, they had
that's
two.
The birthday.
Oh,
that's her birthday. No. So we
just
will
one.
Yeah, one. And so what then happens, we digressed, is then they get taken to the yearling sales. So we are preparing this Thursday and this Friday. We've got the sales happening, which is like an auction. There's a thick book that's produced, like that's an encyclopedia, with literally maybe about 300 horses. And you see the lineage there. And you see how the lineage has performed. You know, it could be the grandmother, you know, won at Royal Ascot 20 years ago. And that then also then determines potentially what the going price would be for that horse at the auction.
So even if you've made your best effort to match the mare with a great stallion and breed a good horse, you have no guarantees that that's going to be a stellar racehorse, that that's going to be a machine on the track.
It's almost like saying you're so certain that Djokovic and Serena Williams will have this brilliant Wimbledon champion child, right? At the end of the day, it's an athlete. You know, that horse will perform to the best of what it's able to do. Chances are you've paid it up quite nicely and you've set it up for a good future, but it could actually also not work. So there have been people that bought, yearlings for 3 million, 5 million rands, and it just doesn't perform. And then you see it becomes a pony for horse riding, you know, in the parks or whatever the case may be for polo. Those are just didn't cut out to be. A performance horse.
So what else goes into breeding a racehorse? Like, as I said, that you know when they say a car has horsepower, those are the horses we're talking about. These absolute racing machines.
Yeah. So obviously we've spoken a lot about, let's call it the DNA, right? The DNA of what forms them. And they then become a yearling, and they are, let's say Lerato goes to the sales on Thursday and buys a product of Trippy and Mrs. Geriatrics. Mm. You've now got to take it to a trainer. Mm. But even before then, it goes to what's called the kindergarten farm, because it's still a year, right?
Yeah.
It's not about to race.
Yeah.
So you need it to develop probably for another 12 months. And so here's the other truth around the costs. Until it starts to race and stands a chance of winning stakes, it's all on you. So for the first 12 months we had Mrs. Geriatrics, she wasn't racing. So we kept her with the trainer. She's got to be fed. She's got to be injected. You know, we've got African horse sickness that we've got to prevent against. Mm. All that still happens.
All the inoculations. Like
exactly.
A baby.
You know, like a baby, exactly. So you've got a good training foundation that you must form. And we've got some really good trainers in South Africa. So then the horse comes back from kindergarten and will then go to either Turfantine, Runkies Fontaine, to be stabled there. And then the trainer probably soon thereafter will make a determination, but may run probably the following September when she's now two, because that's when Mrs. Geriatric started running. Mm. She's now two. Remember, she could have been born in April. Yeah, doesn't
whatever,
matter.
But first of
September, she turned two, and then she started soon racing after that. So then the trainer will see, is this a sprinter? Is she like a Usain Bolt?
Yeah.
Or is she a long distance runner?
Yeah.
And you then start to make those pairings. You'll start to maybe 1,000, maybe 1,400. Who's the right jockey for that horse?
Yeah.
Which is the right course for that horse, right? So there's a little bit of science that's also involved around there. But really fantastic when it all comes together.
Okay, so a few things. This might sound like a stupid question.
Yeah.
So the jockey has to be a small person.
Oh, yeah.
Has to be.
Not a doubt. Has to be. So the jockeys have to be, because obviously the horse of the weight of the horse counts, and then plonk, you put in a fundi. You're not setting up the horse for
you're a tall
winning.
Woman, but you're not a big woman.
But even the height is additional weight that the horse has got to carry, right? So you've got little Muzieni, for example. I always say Muzi's about this short, and they don't even eat because they have to maintain a certain weight because the horse weight plus the jockey's weight plus the merit rating equals to where they're going to start at that race for that day. So if you have, let's say, been drawn into gate number one, you are the best rated in the field because of a whole lot of dynamics, and that includes the jockey's weight. Oof. If the jockey gains weight, then there's penalizing that then happens.
Oh my gosh.
Or if something is off from when it was initially weighed, because they get weight at the beginning and at the end, penalties start to kick in. So you've got to maintain that so much to also just ensure the horse wellness.
Okay. I might be backtracking a little bit, but I've seen, you know, when we talk about breeds of horses and they get named things like an Arabian horse, you just know is an exceptional horse. But even their... Is it fur? Their coat. It's shiny. So horses look different depending on circumstances. Tell us about that. And it's not just the breeding, it seems to me. Or it is?
No, it is. So the Arabian horse is a different type of horse to the thoroughbred horse. So a thoroughbred horse tends to be longer, thinner legs, whereas the Arabian horse looks maybe a little bit more like a show horse, right? Very tall and almost like majestic, whereas... Yes. A thoroughbred horse, simply put, is made for running and running as quickly as possible. So the make is different. Then you've got these, I don't know what they call them in America, sort of like the cowboy ones that they, you know, that they ride. Exactly. Yeah. And they're thicker and they've got shorter legs, stumpier, and those aren't meant for racing. So thoroughbred, like I say, you have to maintain the thoroughbredness in how it's bred, in the look and feel. And then you've got the Arabian horses. So that's literally the difference.
Okay, so you've got those that are athletes, thoroughbred, and then you've got those that are beauty queens, Arabian, and then you've got the workhorses. Just get on the farm and help.
Correct.
Okay, and those are the short, stumpy ones.
Yeah, and the quote, by the way, you know that some of the horses before race day, you can put on Vaseline or glycerin.
Really?
To make
is that
look...
one shiny?
Yes.
Oh, the gleam.
But it's also the health. So the gleam helps it, but it's also the health. So if the horse is well taken care of and it's eating well and it's not sick, it's just like us as ladies as well. If your skin is popping, you're eating right, you're exercising, your skin looks great. So it's the same thing with a horse.
I see. And do they only just eat carrots?
No, they don't eat carrots. That's actually another myth. Racehorses don't eat. Don't get me wrong, but that's not their diet. That's not their stable diet. They've got proper. They're on a proper diet. They've got all sorts of hay, all sorts of nutrients, etc.
Oh,
I mean, you'll see a horse when it's won, they'll get a reward and a carrot, etc.
Yeah,
but that's not their daily food.
That's not what they eat.
No.
Okay. And you know, when you're driving through like the Free State, you just see farmers for days putting up bales of hay, preparing for the winter. So it's that kind of intense investment that's needed where you stable them.
That's it. So you've got this, you're stabling them, you're feeding them. And here's the other important people in the value chain are the grooms. So you were speaking about, you know, Lesotho. A lot of the grooms that are here in Joburg are from Lesotho because they're such easy horsemen. They understand the temperament of a horse.
So what do we mean by a groom? The person who looks after the horse?
Literally wakes up at 4 o'clock in the morning, Lerato, to make sure that the horse is up, ready to run, ready to train. Helps, you know, the trainer and the vet will agree on medicine. The groom will make sure that the horse takes the medicine, is the one that brushes the coat. And they take such pride because these are almost like their babies.
Mm.
And it's just so amazing to watch. But the groom is literally with the horse. They even travel with the horses in certain instances. They get into the truck because you don't want horses to start acting up and start,
whilst being transported.
So the grooms are such an integral part of these horses. It's unbelievable.
Sure. You know what? This is like a whole new world, right? Yeah. I just feel like somebody opened a door and said, walk through, and I'm just standing here in awe and I don't know what to do. And it's a kaleidoscope and it's an extrasensory experience. And it's all happening here in South Africa.
It is. It is. And I always say, you know, until I got into the industry myself, I didn't realize it, the percentage of what we bring into the GDP, whether it's betting or actual through exports and the breeding, But it's such a significant value chain in this country.
Okay.
So, yeah, very important.
Okay. And then, Fundi, as we sort of start winding down our conversation, and I see now James wants to talk to us. Let's see if he comes through. You know, are there parts of the country that just lend themselves to the sport, the breeding, the industry? I mean, I'm looking here on Google, and it says Eastern Cape is a hotspot for horses. It's kind of embedded in the culture of the Eastern Cape for people to ride horses. Whereas here I'm talking about Lesotho, they're saying no. All through the Eastern Cape, KZN, Africans have been riding horses forever.
For decades. And so what's big in the Eastern Cape and KZN is what we call traditional racing. We've also got it now in Northwest. Because we've lived with horses all our lives and we've used horses for our kind of daily lives and daily activities, that those communities are huge. So as a result, they do informal horse racing that we started to start to support just to make sure that at least horse welfare is looked after. But it's huge. But obviously breeders, large breeders are based in the Western Cape. There's breeders in KZN, not so much inland.
Yeah.
But yeah, it literally is almost cross-provincial.
Wow. James, good morning.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thank you. Go ahead.
Just a quick one. Just intrigued, how big was Marcus Eustace's horses in terms of number? And was he really winning or he was just a hobby?
Oh, gosh, I don't know.
He was the biggest guy.
Vundi, do you want to wade into the Marcus Eustace story? Okay, let's take away everything else we know about him, but they say he's a big horse breeder, racer.
He was. So Marcus probably, and James is right, and this was before even when I took over. So Marcus at some stage owned well over 200 horses as a race owner. And he also had a stud farm. The name escapes me now. So he was very, very big into the industry. And I think he was on the board of Pumalela Gaming and Leisure at that time. So we obviously bought the assets of Pumalela Gaming. So I never really came across him. But avid horse person.
Okay, so we are just out here in Sandton hanging around with people. You see somebody sitting at a coffee shop. You could just be looking at a huge race, a horse racer.
You could.
Okay.
You could.
Okay, so as we
you
say...
You could be one yourself.
You know, I'm sitting here thinking, I want to buy an ear. I want to buy geriatric's ear. I might afford the ear. Fundi Sithebe, thank you so much for coming through. Somebody's saying, Lerato, Carol Bauer is also a horse owner, if we're going to look at a new generation of owners.
She was. I think her and her husband had quite a few and they were racing. But my understanding is that when I came into the industry, she started divesting. Mm. And to be honest, I haven't seen any of her horses racing immediately. I could be wrong. But yeah.
But for all of us, let's look out for Geriatric.
Mrs. Geriatric,
Owned by a syndicate of new young black women. Fundi Sithebe is one of them. Jessica Mutaung, you know, when she's not on the football pitch, she's at the race course, and many others. Did you say one is called MK's Colors?
MK's Pride.
That's a whole nother conversation. Fundi Sithebe, CEO of 4 Racing, it's been a beautiful education.
Thank you so much for having me.
Time for the news.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.